I never had a plum or tuna fish.
Baby, no!
Let me try some new exciting dish.
Baby, no!
Bok choy, collard greens, pad thai. So many foods I haven't tried. I'm kinda scared to eat them. I won't lie!
Welcome to Baby Mouth. I'm Jimmy Smagula. You can follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at Baby Mouth Pod. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jimmy Smagula. You can write into the podcast with a food nightmare, a food question, a food problem at babymouthpodcast@gmail.com. I'll help you through it because kind of at this point, I'm almost an expert in eating things that are scary. I've eaten so many things that are scary. I was just today looking back on the podcast and all the episodes I've done, and I thought to myself, this was like, you ever have an idea, you're like, this is such a great idea, and then you start to do it and think, this was not a great idea. This is what the podcast has been, because it has forced me to eat these things that in my mind have been crazy. Oysters, sardines, catfish, which I enjoyed. So it's been a real journey. Thank you all for coming on the journey with me. We have merch, which is so crazy. My mother actually bought some merch. The links are all on my Instagram. You can find them. And this week, I am diving in to chicken larb. And I have to tell you, I didn't even know what that was until my guest this week suggested it. I'm so excited to have her. I don't know her at all. I'm just a fan. And I just randomly asked her on Instagram to please come on my little podcast. And she said
Jimmy.
Yes.
Jimmy, you're encouraging people. No.
Okay, wait. Don't anyone else ask her. She's not going to say yes. But she is a creator. She is a podcaster. She created bajillion-dollar properties, which I cannot wait to talk to her about. And I'll tell you why when we get into it. I'm so excited. Please welcome to Baby Mouth, Kulap Vilaysack. Kulap, welcome to Baby Mouth.
I mean, thank you much for that spirited intro. I love your energy already.
It's a lot.
And you pronounced my name correctly, so you have a lot of points.
Can I tell you, I practice and I am sweating because I think it is so rude. And I have a last name that people... My last name is Smagula, S-M-A-G-U-L-A, and people frequently say Smagula. And I always say to them, say it the fun way, Smagula. It's such a fun last name, but I am with you in that group of people who frequently have their last names, I'm sure, pronounced incorrectly.
Yeah. And when they say your name like that, it sounds like something that comes from my bottom parts.
From your hoo-ha.
My hoo-ha.
I recently listened to your podcast, and you were talking about sleeping in moist panties. Now, is this something that you often talk about on your podcast? Is it a lady parts focused add to cart podcast?
It often comes up simply because we're sitting on them. You know, we're in our bodies. It's two women, myself and Suchin Park.
Yes,
Park,
who I love.
Oh, my God.
We just talked about this.
I know. I know. And oh, I'm upset with myself.
Yes. You're a horrible person.
I'm a horrible person.
Oh my God. That's so... Now, are you somebody who... Would you say that you are a baby mouth? Did you grow up eating a lot of different kinds of foods?
I wouldn't say I was... Now my mouth is decrepit. But I was thinking, coming on your podcast, how funny it is that I've been with my husband, Scott Aukerman, since I was 19.
Oh, and my so, God. I didn't know that.
I will be 41 in May.
That makes me want to cry. I'm not even kidding. That is incredible.
It's a long time.
Be in this industry and live in this town and be as successful as you both are, to have that relationship still be working for all the things that you have gone through and all the ways you have grown since you were 19. I don't know if he's much older or younger than you are, or if you're about the same age.
He's 10 years older.
Wow. So just to think of how much you have changed and grown as people, and yet you still make it work, that it literally makes me emotional. It makes me so happy.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. My phone is going.
That's all right. Off. Is somebody calling? Maybe it's your husband.
Let me. I do this thing where I just hang up.
You're just going to pick it up. She's going to pick up the phone and hang it up. Is that a landline, Kulap?
It's a landline.
Are you the only AT&T landline client in all of life? Now, do you have that for like earthquake or disaster purposes?
Yeah. And just, yes. And just like, you know, sometimes to call out and just have stable, you don't have to worry about, coverage.
Yes.
In that way. And your bars on your cell phone. That's why we have it.
Yes. That's really good, actually.
But it's mainly to call out. And so when people call in, I'm just like, what?
Yeah, who's
like,
calling you? Did you see a number on there? Did you recognize a number?
Jimmy, I didn't even look. I answered it and then I hung up.
You are committed to doing this podcast. Nothing's going to stop you now.
I'm not interested. If anybody really needs to get a hold of me, it's my cell phone.
All right. Because what if that was like HBO Max saying they want to put bajillion-dollar properties on there now, which I think they should, frankly, because it's funny.
Thank you so much. I wish that was the case. I feel like, you know, there are other... This isn't the way to get to me.
The big call's not coming on the landline, is what you're saying.
You reached me through my IG. You know what I mean? Like they need to do that too.
And I'll tell you, I have messaged other people on their Instagrams and they do not respond. Teresa Caputo, Long Island Medium, I want you on my podcast. No response. The other Teresa Giudice from the New Jersey.
She knew you were coming.
She knew I was. Yeah, she was like, she woke up that morning. She's like, I feel like spirit's telling me some crazy Italian guy from LA is going to message me. Teresa Giudice from the New Jersey Housewives. No response. Lisa Vanderpump, no response. Kulap responded right away.
Jimmy, these people have millions of followers.
Kulap, you are a big deal. And you were one of my favorite podcasting people. I love you on a podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Now tell me about Bajillion Dollar, because I am an actor and a writer.
Congrats.
It's not been easy, as you know. But before the pandemic, I was on the national tour of Les Miserables, and I was touring the country playing Thénardier. Yes, I did seven Broadway shows. I know.
Wow, that's so exciting.
Kulap, I did seven Broadway shows in 11 years before I moved to Los Angeles in 2011. Now I do mostly television, but Les Mis was the first show I ever saw as a kid and the reason why I'm an actor at all. So when the role of Thénardier came up, I had to audition. I flew myself to New York. I stayed with a friend and I got the part. But we got shut down for COVID and I'm sitting at home and there's no opportunities and I'm getting like a couple on tape auditions that are crappy. And I'm like, what am I going to do with my life? And all of my friends are becoming real estate agents. And I started watching Million Dollar Listing. I'm not kidding you. With Josh Flagg and Josh Altman and the Altman brothers and this other woman who got a divorce. She's blonde. She sold her Brentwood home for like $20 million.
Yep.
Cool up. They would be like, yeah, if I sell this home, the potential commission is $237,000 on one house. What are we doing with our lives? Why don't we go? Did you ever want to? Now, did you watch that show?
Yes.
Were you obsessed with it?
Yeah, yes. And generally, like, so when I started the show, when the kernels of the idea came from, like, seeing my dear friends in my circles doing Burning Love, well, that's The Bachelor.
Yes,
right? Hot Wives. Well, that's The Real Housewives.
Yes.
And you named a few already. But my best friends love that show. It's not for me. It's not for me.
Yeah.
But what I love is HGTV and real estate shows.
Yes.
What I would do before I even owned a home was just go to open houses.
Yes, we would do that too. Yeah, we would do that all the time, especially in Palm Springs. We'd love. You ever go in Palm Springs?
No, I haven't.
Some of them
gone to open houses.
They're like walking into a time warp.
That's so cool.
Time capsule from like the 70s or the 60s. It's wild. The shag carpeting, the weird, just crazy mid-century modern. But it's not new mid-century modern. It's literally mid-century.
Like, yeah.
I bet
those estate sales are just... I'm glad I'm not fully into that stuff because it's something that I would become obsessed with.
Right. And so you would really go to open houses and then you were like, well, I should make a show that is.
Yeah, because it's the very nature of like, and this is the truth, like buying a home is one of the most stressful experiences for anyone.
Yes.
Like it's death of a family member. And buying a home can ruin you.
Yes.
It's just you're at such a high frequency. And when you're at such a high and anxious frequency, comedy lives and can grow there. And so that was my thought process. And when Tom Lennon and Ben Grant of Reno 911 became producers, everything just sort of came together. So essentially, Bajillion Dollar Properties is Reno. It's like a Reno 911 set in the world of Million Dollar Listing.
Yes. And I just was so obsessed with Million Dollar Listing, and I love Bajillion Dollar. Drew Tarver is so funny on it. There's many good people on it. Yeah. It's just so great. I hope people
watch. They're all stars now.
They're all stars now. Well, you found them first, and now they're all stars.
I mean, I can't and I shouldn't take credit, but you know what? You said it.
I think that you should take credit. I think you should.
Okay.
And I think you deserve it.
Yeah. I mean, look, people, you know, in this town, they snatch credit, like, you know.
For
like,
things they've barely even heard of. You know what I mean? You actually created the show, so you can take credit for that.
I mean, it's on Pluto right now, but. And that's fine, and thank you so much, Pluto. But I want it to be on a streaming service. Like, what?
You gotta get it on Netflix Hulu.
It's a Paramount show. Why is it not on Paramount Plus?
You tell me. You gotta make the call, Kulop. You're in charge of it, not me. I'm a lonely independent podcaster. I can't help.
But you were in Les Mis.
I was in Les Mis. I could get like maybe Bajillion Dollar Properties the musical. Would you want to do that? I could help you do that.
I mean, that's interesting, isn't it?
I think we could start that off Broadway and get a good team of writers together, then move it to a bigger house.
Paul of Tompkins? Come on.
Wonderful. He's
wonderful
made for
voice.
He's made for the Broadway. Drew Tarver, I saw him do something musical at UCB on that Atlantic City show night that I went to. He was terrific. Well, he was singing.
Have you ever heard Tawny Newsom sing?
No.
Oh, Tawny Newsom.
You're kidding me.
No, she has a band. She is so musically, she's a musical genius. And during this Demi, as no one calls it, some people call it the pandy, the quar.
The pandy.
How are you?
I like a pandy.
The pandy.
I like that.
She recorded an album and like, she's got a beautiful voice. She's an amazing songwriter.
God.
She learned how to be an engineer because of necessity.
Wow. Yes. Well, I think I smell a collaboration coming on. Bajillion Dollar, the musical. Why not? They have The Office, the musical, and no offense to the people, but I'm sure it's not very good.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. We'd make a good one. That would be a great idea.
The Bajillion Dollar Musical.
Yeah, the Bajillion Dollar Musical. You're not from Los Angeles, right? When did you move here and why?
Okay, and this will swing back to what I totally forgot I was going with telling you about Scott and me and my baby, my formerly baby mouth.
Yes.
So I moved here when I was 18, right fresh out of high school.
Whoa.
Like to go to the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising.
Oh my God.
And so I remember when Scott and I first started dating when I was like 19, and he introduced me to fish burritos and fish tacos.
Okay.
There wasn't any, there was absolutely Americanized Mexican food, Taco Bell, Chi-Chi's in Minnesota, but there wasn't like at the time, it wasn't normal to have like fish tacos.
Right.
And I was like, this is really good.
Wow.
But I think about that, like how that was something I didn't know about. And I had sushi. I had sushi, but not like.
In Minnesota?
Yes.
I feel like that's scary if you're too far from the sea. You know what I mean? Like if you're, how are they getting the fresh, raw? I've never had sushi to this day.
This is going to get turned on to you pretty quick. Pretty quick, even though I understand it's like you had a limited menu, you grew up in a certain area of the country.
Yes, New Jersey.
Okay, I get that. It's a texture thing too, right? In a disgust?
It's not a No, I have no texture issues. It's a taste thing. If there's a fishy, like I did oysters and sardines, and they were horrifying for me to eat them. They were so fishy. The oyster just tastes like you're putting your, I think I said it was like if there was a castle in an aquarium and I broke off a piece of the castle and put that in my mouth, like a dirty aquarium castle, that's what the oyster, to me, it wasn't good. But the catfish I had, fried catfish, was delicious and it didn't taste fishy.
I understand that. I get it. And it's not, I like sushi, but like I'm about to, while I'm talking to you, I have to take these like fish oil. Look at these massive fish oil.
But don't you then burp up the fishy taste? Because I was taking those fish oil and then I burped up the fishy taste and I was like, forget it. I'm not doing this. And by the way, I just had a big heart thing because I have sleep apnea. And so I went and I slept over and they were like, now you have to go have an EKG and have another scan to make sure your heart is okay. Everything's perfect. My scan, it's a calcium. It tells you how much your arteries are blocked. Zero Coolop. Zero. Not even like a one or a two. A zero.
I recently did that scan.
How was it?
I don't. It turned out great. My numbers betray how strong and clear my arteries are, but I hated doing it. Wasn't it so uncomfortable?
Have you ever had an MRI, like a proper MRI?
No.
Oh, see, that scan is a walk in the park compared to the MRI where they put you in a small cylinder all the way in for like 40 minutes and it goes bong, bong. It makes crazy loud. Now look, what it's doing is literally seeing through your body. It's an extraordinary thing. But can't they figure out a fucking way to make it not sound like you're going to just explode? Like it's like your whole body's just going to explode. It's horrifying. So that the scan that we had, that calcium scan, whatever, that's nothing compared to an MRI.
I know that to be true, and I'm being a little bitch. But did you, when you go in, and you know, your eyes just naturally settle to what's above you, right? Yep. And in your machine, was it like right above you? It was like, don't look here.
Yes.
And when you're told not to look there, it's like, oh,
don't look at this laser. Yeah.
Don't look at this point. And I'm like, okay. And it's just so hard not to look.
Did you go to Huntington Hill in Glendale? I wonder if we had the same machine.
I wonder if we've been that intimate. No, I was in Santa Monica at Tower Imaging.
Oh, why so far? I know where you live because I picked up the gummy bears.
Wait, isn't Huntington further?
No, Pasadena. Don't you want to do East Side things or no?
I would prefer to do East Side things, but I had to go see a cardiologist. Okay. She was in Santa Monica.
All right.
And was referred to. So then she was like, go to Tower, which was near her.
Okay.
But I'm
and you're not comfortable sharing your number of your test. But it was not zero. I'm not trying to be competitive. I'm just wondering.
I don't think it was zero.
Interesting.
But it was really, everything was fine.
Good. It's so scary.
Where would I see? Yeah, like, I mean, I'm so comfortable with telling you, like, because I have them here, my numbers in general.
She's literally grabbing papers now. Look at this. Here's her scan.
I
mean,
you know, I don't know if I have my scan with me, but I know that that looked good.
This is incredible. Like, you planned this. Did you plan to steer the conversation in this direction? Because she literally, in 6 seconds, picked up her entire chart of her heart scan.
No, this isn't my heart scan. This is just all of my tests. So I can tell you what my cholesterol is.
What's the cholesterol? Under 200?
The total?
Yeah.
224.
Now, cool up. That's high, 224.
I know. That's why I had to do all these things. I know.
How long ago was that?
This was January, in January. But okay. I made huge shifts.
If you want help, let me know, because I lost 60 pounds because of my diabetes.
Yes, my situation is I am pre-diabetic and I have fatty liver.
Okay. Well, most people who are diabetic also have fatty liver. I have a fatty liver as well because of the years of undiagnosed diabetes. Are your parents, either one of them, diabetic?
My mother is.
Yes, mine too. It's genetic. Very, very genetic. In fact, my doctor said to me, you could probably eat a salad every day and you would still be high on the high scan. So we just have to be careful, but it sucks.
It does suck. Jimmy, there's been a reckoning. And the reckoning was coming. It was a long time coming. And it really, the hammer came down in December, and I have been making huge changes.
It's very hard. Is your husband supportive of the changes? Is he changing with you as well or not so much?
He is, because my diet right now is very much because of my situation. I'm not saying it's for other people.
Well,
but for me,
yes,
and my history and my parents' history, mm-hmm. it's a very, it's not about counting calories, as you know, Jimmy. It is about fasting plus no, you know, really limited sugars and carbs.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's my situation, what's been advised for me and which seems to be working. I have lost 19 pounds.
Congratulations. It's huge.
Thank you. I lost my COVID-19. And
wow.
Yeah, I know. I'll see myself out.
Good one. Thank you, Kulop, for appearing on the program.
But also, you guys, I did gain 19 pounds during this quar.
You've gained and lost all within the parameters of one pandemic.
That's right. And that's what I can toss that around. And I've always been able to do that. But the thing is, this is a lifestyle change. And so I, you know, essentially from dinner to breakfast, I have to, it's a 14 hour fast.
Right.
And if I put a drop of cream into my coffee, that breaks my fast.
Yes.
And then it's largely organic veggies. Yes. But it's stuff to keep me full. So it's proteins and fats, organic proteins and fats.
So for me, it's just been all portion control, but that's difficult because for me, food was feeding something that was 100%. Mental and psychological.
Me too.
And I'm sure for you and for every, you know, food, we talk about this all the time, how we use food.
Oh, absolutely. Like food to be, I mean, it's I want to say right off the bat, having gone through, like, not nasty, there are worse things than sugar withdrawals, but it's unpleasant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is headaches. It is flu-like symptoms.
Yes.
And I feel so much better. I feel so much better. Yes, and for me, food is celebration.
Yes.
Food and alcohol, celebration. What I consume is celebration. In my household growing up, food was medicine. When you're sad, it was so emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard for me to, even though I feel so much better, I wrestle with, like, I know it's better for me. I know that how I feel that it's better, but it's hard for me to just, like, say I can't have things.
Yes.
It's just so, and I think there's something right now as we're opening up again.
Mm-hmm.
Where I feel like we're all moving out from our mom's house. We can do whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah.
That's just like my mentality right now. And that I'm still going to be restrictions just seem so binding. And I feel myself rebelling, you know. Well, now I'm worried about you and eating the sticky rice.
No, I love sticky rice. And I'm not going to eat it all. I never eat it all. I'm very smart about it. But let's get into the chicken larb. I didn't know what larb was.
Okay, first thing.
Yes, go ahead.
First
please.
Thing, because it's not your fault. You are pronouncing it the way it has been spelled.
Oh, no.
And how could you know? But the Lao way is lap. And it's so hard because it's a weird mouth thing where the R is really soft.
Lob.
It's lap.
Lob.
It's almost like, it's more like L-O-B.
Almost like lob. Like
yeah,
a tennis
but lob. Yeah.
Lob.
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 Yeah.
I was saying larb. I hope I didn't offend the people at Hoi Ka. The place you suggested was not open on Mondays.
Oh, okay. So you went to Hoi Ka.
I had to go to Hoi Ka, which I love. And I've been to Hoi Ka many times,
place.
But only ever gotten the fried rice with chicken. That's all I would get there.
It's tasty. They've got great noodles as well. They're known for their noodles.
Never got them. Never had them. Only ever gotten fried rice at Hoi Ka and chicken satay, which I enjoy, of course, which is just chicken on a stick.
Great for our diets.
I know, horrible. But
no,
I got
it's
the
great.
Chicken. Oh, chicken satay is probably good. It's just chicken.
Perfect. Yeah.
But
so
I would
good.
Get a side of sticky rice and the peanut sauce, which is so delicious. And that
so
can't
delicious.
Be good for us. Chicken lab.
Yeah.
Now I'm sounding like I'm from Boston. Chicken lab.
It works for me.
All right. Now, did you probably knew this, but I Googled a little bit of the chicken lab.
Yeah.
It is the unofficial dish of Laos.
That's
did you
right.
know it's the unofficial national dish?
I'm curious what the official is, if not that.
Right. It's odd that they have an unofficial dish. Like, did people, was there like an uprising where the people were like, we don't want it to be that. We want it to be this. And this is now the unofficial dish.
Yeah, the only thing I'm like, maybe tamahong, which is a papaya salad, is the official, but it does. I don't know if that's the case.
All right. I'm going to start taking out the chicken lap.
Lab. Yes, lab. And I it's a love. Minced chicken salad.
Yeah, it looks like a chicken salad.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be more in like a curry. I don't know. The things I have made up in my head, I just had boba for the first time, and I thought it was a root vegetable in a stew. I thought pad thai was a soup. I love pad thai. I never knew what it was until I ate it on this podcast. I thought it was soup. It's not. It's delish.
You were thinking it was tom yum, maybe?
I don't know. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. But I want to try it all now because I've eaten. Oh, boy.
You got chicken lob. You asked them to do it mild because generally
And let me just say for our listeners, let me publicly thank you. Because I would not have told them to do anything spice level. And you said, Jimmy, do you know about spice levels? And I was like, no. And that tipped me off. And I was like, thank you for mentioning that.
Yes.
You've been Thai a wonderful and guest food. So far, I have to say.
Oh, thank you. Thank
very
you.
Very accommodating. Very caring about my experience. All right. I've opened the chicken lab.
Okay.
Mmm, that looks good. There's onions. I like onions.
Yes. Oh, so it's ground or minced chicken.
That smells really good. Look at that.
And generally, ooh, that looks delicious. Yeah, generally, Thai and Lao spice is very strong spiced.
Did your parents cook a lot of this kinds of food when you were?
Yes, definitely. This is our and so this food, the sticky rice that you have, like we don't. This is hands. This is food you eat with your hands, and so you take a little bit of the sticky rice, and then you kind of use it almost like it's a spoon, and you.
You're kidding.
No, this is all hands.
Use a fork with this?
No. No, not at all.
I had no idea.
Yeah, we use sticky rice as like a lot of our foods are. You eat with your hands.
Handy.
Yeah, so you take the rice and you take a little ball of it.
You kind of like mold it even.
Exactly.
This makes sense now.
Yeah, and that might be too much because, you know, so take a little bit of it and then.
She didn't like the portion I took, people. All right. It's okay. It's fine. I'm learning. I want you to guide me.
Well, just because you want to take one bite, right? Like it's going to be one bite.
It's so interesting because I often thought, I wonder why it's sticky. Like, why? Who decided to make it sticky? Is it just for fun? But now I know it's used as a scoop.
Exactly.
Cool up. So I love this.
Yay!
I'm so glad that you told me that. I love that I learned that. I've never seen anyone in a restaurant do this with sticky rice, ever.
They eat it with a fork?
Always. I've never seen anybody do this with sticky rice and eat it with their fingers. My fingers are now sticky, but this is terrific.
When I was like, a snack when I was a kid, you take a little bit of rice and you dip it in soy sauce. And a breakfast would be like that and like egg.
So now just scoop some of this onto the rice like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now just go for it?
Go for it.
All right. First time. I always announce it, Cool Up. I've done it since the first. I don't know why I do this, but it's fun. First time chicken lob with Cool Up, who I love. The most caring and accommodating guest I've had thus far on the Baby Mouth podcast show. Here I go. Mmm. Ooh. Mmm. 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 You know, it's a little lemony.
Yeah, lime. Now, that's lime.
Limey. Now, I could see how this could be very spicy because I asked for little spice. The woman who took my order laughed at me because I was like, just a little. She was laughing because she could tell the nerves in my voice. But it still has a little bit of a kick, but this is delish. I'm going to take another. Wait, I'm getting a bigger piece of the sticky rice. Mm. Are you jealous that I'm eating this?
I am a little jealous. So this is lap cai. Cai is chicken in Lao. You're having lap cai with cow neo, and that's sticky rice. And sticky rice is glutinous rice. So if you eat too much of it, it'll make you sleep.
Mmm. Oh, the lime and the spice really comes through.
You've got so we have lime juice in there. There's herbs. Yeah, we've got green onion shallots sometimes.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, my God.
We got cilantro, mint leaves generally. Galanga, which is a type of, like, almost like a ginger. It's a root. You got fish sauce. You got, you know.
Really? That scares me that there's fish anything in here.
Oh.
Is that yes. true?
Yes, there is. There is.
All right. I don't taste a fish. I wish you didn't tell me that. I'm scared now of it. Because there is like a juice on the bottom of it, but that's not fish, I hope.
No. The fish sauce gives it umami.
I like umami. I don't know what that is. I mean, I know umami burger, but that's not the same.
It gives it a more depth of flavor. It's something, you know, normally people talk about like sweet, salty, sour, bitter. Mm. And like the fifth is umami. It gives it's a rich, you know, mushrooms have a lot of umami.
Do you think a lot of people know that and that I'm in the minority? Like, do you think if you said umami to a bunch of people, they'd be like, oh, I know what that is. Like, am I really like out of the loop?
You're out. Well,
you could be honest. You're not going to offend me.
I think if you, it's a type of people, right? So if you watched Top Chef and you live in LA and you go, there's umami burger. Mm-hmm. Then you go, oh, okay, I know what umami is. If you watch food, you know, any sort of like food TV.
Yeah, I don't watch that much.
So then how would you know?
Right. But you seem to know so much.
I love food.
You seem to know every ingredient in that.
Well, because it's like it is the unofficial dish of Laos. Yes, of your people,
yes.
And the version I'm going to guess that the people from Hoi Ka are Thai. So they would do the kind of food that Lao people do is a little funkier, a little spicier, a little bolder. Our flavors are a little bolder. Not even just about the spice. We tend to use we use fish sauce and we use a unfiltered fish sauce, which would scare you even more.
Oh yeah.
But if I never told you and if I never had you see it or smell it, you would never tell in the finished product.
Really?
You would go, this is so good. Why?
Really?
The second I showed you grandma's barak that has been fermenting in a paint, like a big canister underneath the kitchen sink or in the garage, and I lifted the thing and you smelt the putrid, you would lose yourself. You would lose yourself.
It's hard.
It's fermented fish sauce. But if I just put it in your food, you would never know. And you go, this is amazing.
Was there a big Laotian community where you grew up?
Minnesota has one of the largest Lao and Hmong communities.
Wow. And
we went, so we, there was in the, during the Vietnam War, Laos, the U.S. bombed Laos to another dimension. And bombs still remain. They're unexploded ordnances. And it was all in secret. But not for the people who fled that land. It was, we're here because of, the U.S., and their illegal bombing of our country.
Wow.
And so we were brought here and was given amnesty for that reason. And where we were located has everything to do with one, the church systems and people who would, sponsor us, two, wherever there were factories and sort of specific like businesses where that cheap workforce could then transition into.
Yes.
So that's why there are places in Minnesota. That's why in Sioux Falls, where there are a lot of pig processing plants.
Oh.
Why in Fresno, there's a big population. Why in certain parts of Texas, there are big populations that haven't moved is because of that. Growing up in Minnesota, being a minority of a minority, and I mean, this may not be the first time you've heard it because it's not certainly a term that I invented, but being made to feel like the wrong Asian and the perpetual foreigner, regardless of the fact that I was born in Washington, D.C., it's where are you from? But where are you really from? Where are you really, really from? And so being Lao from Laos, when there's a large majority of the U.S. population who does not know where that country is in the world.
Yes. You taught me where that country was in the world because I looked you up.
Yeah, well.
And you taught, I mean, I'm embarrassed to say that, but that's the truth. That's my truth.
That alone. That's my truth of why I am so like, so hard, like such the Lao street team, because, and Jimmy, understand when I started in this business, I know you can relate. I feel like my friends are like, oh my God, Cool Ups. Like, we knew she was Lao, but like the last 6 years, she's like really Lao. Like, and when you start off, you just, you're putting your head down, you know, coming through UCB and like improv and alt comedy in LA, you know, you just, you start to wear, like, at the time everyone's wearing plaid shirts and Chucks and Vans, yes, and whatever. You kind of, I lost myself. And I'll take it back further. My growing up in Minnesota was that assimilation. And I 100% was a part of my own cultural erasure.
Yes.
Making jokes to beat you to them, to make everyone feel okay. Mm. To when someone asked me, where are you from? Just saying Laos, because I know that's what they want.
Yeah.
I know that's what they're asking. But then I have to go, you know, they're like, where's that? What is that? Is that Chinese? Like, it's so frustrating. And so I'm right now at 40, soon to be 41. I feel like I am an elder. I certainly am to the group that I started in LA called Los Angeles. I am one of the older people.
Wow.
You know, I'm so curious to see what being Lao American 2.0 is.
Wow.
We've only been in this country for like 40, 50 years. But that said, this is a version of the American story.
Oh, absolutely. But it just inspires me. I mean, to tell you, like, I know where Laos is because of you is inspiring. You know, it's like that. And also, again, shows me my white ignorance as a person who was just raised in New Jersey, and I'm a white guy, and I'm you know, male presenting and white presenting, and so I have all of those things afforded to me. And it's like, I wasn't sure where Laos was. I knew it was a country. I knew it was not China. That I knew, but yes, I didn't know where it was. I knew that, but I didn't know where it was. And it's just, it's interesting that I, you know, we live in a country of immigrants and we live in a country of all of these people together. That's what America is. And yet we don't get to take the time to get to even know one another a lot of the time.
I think there's the ways in which we were brought up. They are everything's changing rapidly. That reckoning, yes. I was talking to you about my health. There's a greater reckoning.
Yes,
that
is
happening.
Yes.
And the way that we were brought up is no longer. It those ways do not, they do not apply the thought processes. And I think, yes, in the concurrent crises that we have faced during this pandemic, culturally, with the last administration, mm-hmm, with, the, you know, people in the streets because of George Floyd and, mm-hmm, the, you know, everything is, it's a really messy time.
Yes.
And I think, and when this sort of tumultuous, everything's getting kicked up for us, mm-hmm, and the things that we like accepted was okay in now this modern scope, in the way that these kids that are younger than us just naturally look at things,
yes,
falls away, and we go, oh, that was fucked up.
Yes.
Like that's like not right, that's fucked up. And the status quo is being shook, and the status quo does not like it. It's just such an interesting time. So you and I discussing this, I say this too. It's like, we didn't have the opportunity to learn any of this growing up. Our educational, yes, system is so like, it that needs to change. It really does. Our history is so limited.
It's everything.
You know,
education is everything. It sets up who you're going to be. Because we all really, I think at the end of the day, decide who we are. I mean, to bring it back in a way to this podcast, I decided to become someone who tried different foods and in that have learned about people. I really, it has opened up not only my palate and my, yeah, taste buds, but it really opens up. Food is really an interesting, it's an interesting channel to open up so much more. I applaud your advocacy and I applaud your interest and your courage and your desire to want to amplify and even then educate.
I think, and also just with the context that we've been here between 40 and 50 years and war refugees, I stand on the shoulders of my parents and all of their sacrifices and all that they did. In their wildest imagination, did they think that being an actor was a good idea? No, because there are no models. And I think it comes back to that, Jimmy, is that we're young in this country, and that I am one of the first people that have broken through in an entertainment capacity. And so what I'm interested in is showing my younger little brothers and little sisters and my little cousins and stuff that this is an option, that our parents, that we can be beyond their wildest dreams, and that we can be beyond just surviving if we choose to take this step into a creative life. There aren't that many people that I'm aware of that have made it to a position that can turn around and try to like explain things. When I moved here 20 years ago, 22 years ago, I didn't see many loud people, like, you know, and I, my role in this community is to answer questions and to be helpful and to make connections for the community. And that is, I love to do that because I don't want to be I never want to be the only person. At a table. I like a crowded table. And what you're describing, tying it back to your podcast, like eating family style around a table, breaking bread with strangers and family and people we know, that is old magic.
Yeah, it's old magic. That's exactly right. And learning about people through the food is really also like the most interesting thing. You know, it's like any good podcast. You have a thing, but the real thing is the people. You know, you have a food, you have a thing, you have whatever, a hook. But the real podcast is about who are the people and what am I learning about you? And I learned so much about you today. I really did. And it was very deep. This was the deepest podcast I've ever done.
Is that true?
I have to take the comedy title off of this podcast for this particular episode because this was a learning, inspiring, beautiful. This is like on the Oprah Podcast Network. This was beautiful. It was so lovely, but I feel like we connected in a really deep way. And I learned, I mean, it's just, you know, you could learn something about yourself as the host of a podcast that is about trying something new. You could go, wow, I should have tried that catfish 10 years ago. It's delicious. And that's definitely learning something. But when you connect with the person about who they are and you learn something about yourself because of that, that's so, it's just lovely. It was just lovely.
I think that this is such your podcast. And I see it because you're telling me this. It's such a good offering to the universe, to yourself. What I mean to say is that you're, and my background is, you know, my Lao people are Buddhist. I'm from California, so I got I got the crystals. Yeah, I've got good, you know I'm full California.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to offer something. You put upon the altar. To be a better person, I am going to make myself a little uncomfortable.
Yes.
And the more that I do it, the more that I eat things, you know, I try something and I may not like it and that's okay. It's okay that you don't like oysters. I totally understand that. And I've never thought about it, of an island on a shell. Or however you put it. And I'm like, yeah, that's how it tastes.
Castle in an aquarium.
A castle in an aquarium. That's exactly how it tastes. Yeah. Yeah. I also have another, but that is what it tastes like. But you are offering it to it. But you're giving a little bit of yourself. I'm giving you something. You're not closed off.
No.
You put your hand forward. Let me try something new. And that will always, dear listeners, return to you tenfold.
Oh my God. Cool up. I am so happy you said yes to my Instagram message. People, do not message her on Insta. Do follow her because she's my new best friend. But do not message her. She will not write you back. It's going to go into the requests folder. She's going to delete them all. I don't know why she answered mine, but I'm so glad she did.
Honestly, I think it's like you do have it's a clear idea for a podcast. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a good idea for
that's
a podcast.
So
and
nice.
I saw your past guest, and you weren't, it was the tone of it was really good. I was like, yeah, okay.
It's a joyful podcast. I mean, that's what I want it to be. That's what, you know, when I get feedback from my listeners, when they write in or I see whatever, it is about joy. You know what I mean? Like, I hope to connect with people through the joyous experience of trying something new. And like you said, it's not about, well, I didn't like that. And it's funny when guests come on, sometimes they'll feel responsible, like, oh, I'm sorry you didn't like that. It's like, no. It's okay. Like, I don't like olives. I tried olives for the first time and never had an olive. Being an Italian person, that's weird. Never. My mother loves olives. I never had one. And my guest that week was, oh my God, I'm so sorry. No, it's not about that. You did a huge service to me by picking this food that I never tried. It's just about trying it. And I felt so sad and so closed off when the pandemic hit and I lost my job and I was touring around the country, literally in my dream show from when I was a kid. And I got home and I lost all the money and I lost all the travel and I lost all those experiences and the performing and the work of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could either sit here and do nothing for God knows how long, or I can do, let me start creating. I wrote a pilot. I took a class at UCLA Extension. I wrote a pilot. You know what I mean? Like, I did that. I did, because you sit with yourself and go, okay, I'm 45 years old. What have I never done that I want? I want to write a pilot. You know what
I mean? I'm also assuming this is going to become IP for you to pitch this as a reality show too, podcast, yes, right? So yeah, obviously. Yes.
Great. You know, with the hitch, and I was just talking about this with Bridger, is that the more of these I do that are not on television, the less, because I can't now have Chicken Larb on Netflix. I just had it.
Yeah.
You know what
Yeah, but here's the great thing about you. You, from what I can tell, there's more that you haven't tried.
Oh, there's so much more. I mean, there's just a list, and I have to now go back and just add to the list. I mean, there's just so many things that I've never had.
Well, yeah, like you've tried one Lao dish.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? There's so much more for you to try.
Yeah.
So I just don't think it's going to be an issue.
I tried one Indian food dish, chicken gel frizzy. I loved it. But there's 4,000 more to try.
And there's so many different regions and so many different styles of Indian food.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to be fine. But I would make that deck soon. We're emerging out of this.
Yeah.
Soon.
Yeah. And people want to travel and people want to try new things with me. That's the whole point.
Yes.
Well, Kulap, I cannot thank you enough, really, for coming on my show. It was like a touching, emotional, like, it was so lovely. It felt different than any other podcast episode I've done so far. And I thank you for that, because it was really beautiful. It was really beautiful.
Well, I will see you soon.
I hope so. All right, it's time to bring in my mother. Has she ever had chicken larb? Chicken lob? Doubt it. Sounds too scary for Lois, I would think. But again, you never know. You don't know where Lois has been, what she's been doing. Who knows? We're about to find out. Here she comes. She's connecting. She's coming in. Oh, boy. Oh!
I got you. I just got you.
All right. Okay. I'm thrilled that you got me. Here she is. People, my mother. Mom, how's it going? What's happening today?
Absolutely nothing.
What do you do all day?
I did absolutely nothing today.
What did you do? I mean, did you read the paper? Did you watch TV?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was watching golf, Yankees, what I do. Nothing really.
Do you actually like any of those things? Do you like watching golf or the Yankees?
No, but Daddy was, I mean, I could come upstairs and watch whatever I want, but I just stay down there. I read all the newspapers.
I think golf is so boring.
I know. Today's very boring. Went on the deck a little bit.
Oh, that's nice. I like to play golf. I enjoy golfing. But
I
can't get into watching it.
Yeah. Well, I don't. But there's nothing really on television during the day.
And wasn't one of our, isn't somebody, Uncle Freddie or something, wasn't he a professional golfer?
Yes.
Your Uncle Freddie.
Yes, my Uncle Freddie.
Where did he play?
He was the golf pro at, Rockley Golf Course.
I don't know what that
in
is.
In New Jersey.
But,
well, it's up by, it's almost like by New York border, the New York State border.
Way up state,
Rockland, New Jersey. Yeah.
And but did he play in the PGA or anything?
No, I don't think so.
Oh,
no.
He must have been very good. He was a professional golfer.
Golfer, yeah. I gave golf lessons. And
wow.
He was the pro at the club there.
I could use some lessons, but golf is very expensive. It's an expensive
very hobby. Expensive sport,
yeah,
yes,
but
it
I
is.
Do like it. It's nice. You're outside. It's not, you know what I mean? It's just kind of relaxing.
Well, Uncle Anthony and Uncle Jamie, they still play golf. Uncle Artie, he was a golfer,
yes,
you know,
Uncle yes. Artie. Uncle Artie, who passed away, he was a wonderful golfer, and I have a set of clubs from Uncle Freddie's son, Christopher. No, not from Artie, from Christopher.
Oh, I thought, yeah.
Because he owned a golf store.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now he's selling cigars.
Oh, God. Okay, well. That's
he's doing very well. He's like the manager of the East Coast or something. He's doing very well.
I never understand smoking on any level of anything. I mean, it just, I've never been a smoking person.
I know.
I think I had one drag of a cigarette in college to try it, and it was so gross.
I know. We had one couple drags when we were 13 years old. We ran down the park with the Brown twins, me and Aunt Rhody, but we didn't like it. We tried. We didn't even inhale.
I mean, look at my father. He smoked for years and years.
Oh, yeah.
And the interesting thing about smoking, as you know, because I've told you this before, but when you stop, your lungs begin to repair themselves.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, he smoked.
Oh.
Forever. Everybody smoked, I remember.
Of course, and you go to Europe.
But nobody in my family smoked. Well, Uncle Anthony smoked cigars, but
yeah,
that wasn't really smoking them.
But, you know, you go to Paris, you go to... Are you getting a phone call right now?
Yeah, but I'm not answering it.
Here comes the phone call, everybody. Let's wait. Is it going to ring again?
No, I shut it off.
Who could it be at 6 o'clock?
It was Aunt Rhody.
Oh, what could she possibly
want? Well, she's down Tom's River, so.
Oh, well, what does she want?
I have no idea. Maybe just to say hello. What does she want?
Does she call you every day, twice a day?
Yeah, sometimes 3 times, 4 times.
Oh, my God.
We always called a lot.
Yeah, of course. Well, you're twins.
Right.
Well, this week I had this fantastic woman on my podcast. I love her. Her name is Kulap the Lysok. I had to practice her name, and I got it perfectly correct. It's such a beautiful name. She's Laotian from Laos. Her family is from Laos.
And wow.
I know, and she's just beautiful. She's a writer. But we had chicken larb, L-A-R-B, but it's pronounced lab.
What is it? Chicken?
It's like a chicken salad. It's like a Laotian Thai chicken salad.
I hate chicken salad.
You don't like a regular American-style chicken salad?
No.
What don't you like about it? The creamy texture?
I don't like chicken salad. I don't like turkey salad, but I'll eat a turkey with mayonnaise and lettuce or whatever, but I won't eat turkey salad or chicken salad. Isn't that weird?
It is weird, but I've also seen you enjoy potato salad.
Oh, yeah, I like potato salad.
But is potato salad the same thing as chicken salad just with potatoes?
Yeah, but it has potatoes, onions. I don't like chicken
salad.
It must
be the texture of it, right? The consistency.
I don't know, but I'll eat it, you know, plain. But I won't eat it with mayonnaise in a sandwich or with a cracker.
Although you enjoy tuna fish with mayonnaise.
Oh, I love tuna fish.
I would think I would think the chicken salad is like tuna fish, you know, with
it is probably chicken. The same.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
But this chicken larb, it's spelled L-A-R-B, but it's pronounced lab, chicken lab. It's delicious.
What is it? Chicken?
It's chicken with all different spices, but delicious spices. And you get with it the sticky rice. It's called sticky rice. And I didn't know this, but you're supposed to eat it with your hands. You're supposed to pick up the sticky rice and mold it into a thing and then scoop up the chicken lob and eat it. It's delicious.
So I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Oh, God.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It's not something you would even try. It's not juicy or like it's not. It doesn't have any mayonnaise in it.
I know, but I don't like chicken like that. I don't like it. I won't try it because I don't like the consistency. I don't
the texture of it.
Yeah.
But what is there any other kind of chicken, the way it's prepared, that you don't enjoy? Do you like a chicken franchise, a chicken milanese?
Yeah, I like all of them.
You like, I like them. You like a chicken sandwich you would have with mayonnaise and lettuce, a BLT, bacon, lettuce, tomato, with turkey
with
something?
Chicken.
No, but you get that with turkey sometimes, right, or no?
Yeah. No, turkey, I put mayonnaise and I just put mayonnaise on the top of the turkey on the bread.
You know, the Thai, Laotian, Vietnamese food, you would love it. You would be shocked, Mom. I'm telling you, I know that you have a more limited palate than I do.
I know.
We were the same before I started this podcast, so I forced myself to open up my palate. But I'm telling you, you would enjoy these foods. You would be so, I'm doing it because I have to, because I created this podcast, so now I have to try these foods, right? I would never have ordered chicken lob on a menu. I would have never ordered chicken jalfrezi in an Indian restaurant. I would have never ordered pad thai because I thought it was soup. Or pho, the delicious soup that I did have. Remember the Vietnamese soup pho?
I
would never have ordered. It's so, these things are so delicious.
And they're all from different countries.
Well, that's what's wonderful. That's what I was saying with Kulop, is that not only did I get to experience the food, but I learned so much about the culture of Laotian people and the history of that's what food is really about, is that it's like you get to connect with people and you get to learn, like oxtail soup, Mom, you would love it.
I know. Is that the one Aunt Rhody tried?
Yes, oxtail soup. She loves it.
Yeah. Well, she has a great palate because she tries anything and she likes everything.
But oxtail is just meat on a bone. It's just like having a roast beef or something on a bone.
Right. Yeah.
You would like that.
I just think of ox and I said, I don't want it.
Yeah, you don't think of a cow when you have a cheeseburger?
No.
Well, it's the same thing. Everything you're eating comes from somewhere.
I know.
But it's the chicken lob is wonderful and Kulop is just a terrific person. I think you're going to enjoy listening to this episode.
I probably will. I enjoy listening to all.
Have you listened to all of them? No.
No, no.
What's the last one you ever listened to? Do you remember?
I think it was, what's his name?
Norm?
Norm.
Norm, we had Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
That was very good.
Well, when I'm done working, which is in about 6 weeks, I'll have time. I'll be listening to all of them.
Oh, good. Yeah, people are enjoying the podcast. I mean, I like it because I get to try all these new things. I never would have eaten an oyster. It was not delicious, but I know that I don't like it now.
Yeah, and how you doing with your olives?
Well, I stopped that segment because I feel like I plateaued, Mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I ate them for like 9 or 10 weeks, the olive. And
they didn't.
I wasn't afraid to eat them anymore. I knew exactly, I could tell you exactly what they would taste like now, but I didn't love them. They're fine. I wouldn't eat them if they were at a party.
Right, right.
But you eat all different kinds of olives.
Oh, yeah. I like them all.
Yeah, I'm not into it. But I wasn't afraid. I ate them every week. And I went, oh, yeah, they're salty. They're vegetable-y. So I just kind of stopped the segment. I think next season, because we're going to start winding down season one here. But I think for season two, we'll do a different acquired taste segment. Because it is fun. And it is interesting to see. Do you think that people can acquire a taste for something if they just keep trying it over and over again? Or you think if you don't like it from the beginning, then you don't like it?
Yeah, you might like it a little better, but I don't think you would acquire a taste for it.
Yeah, I think that that's true. Although people say, like, I didn't like sushi when I first tried it, you know, when I was 15 or 20, and now I like it.
Yeah, but you're older now, and I don't know. I think if you don't like something, you could try. You might like it a little better, but I don't think you would acquire a taste for it. Like,
no, I think people say that, too. They say, like, if you're – I had a guest on here who's the editor of L.A. Eater, and Farley Elliott, a huge food blog. He tells you all where to go in Los Angeles to get the best everything, anything you want.
Yeah.
And he said he doesn't believe that I would ever acquire a taste because I'm already 45 years old. It's too late.
Right.
My taste buds have stopped developing.
Right.
Is there anything that you like now that you're 75, 74? You're 74 or 75?
Going to be 75.
Yeah, 75 next month. Now that you're almost 75, is there anything that now in like the later years that you're like, you know, I really like that. And when I was 30 or 40, it doesn't even have to be food. Like, it could be reading the paper. Is there an activity that you enjoy a lot more now that you didn't like before? Like, for me, it's reading, which is, I know, it's like, what?
Yeah.
But I never used to read. And now I read all the time. I read books. I read the New York Times almost every, well, not even almost. I read the New York Times every day. I enjoy crossword puzzles. It's like all the things that older people enjoy.
Yeah.
Now I enjoy them. But like I would never sit into a crossword puzzle when I was 25. I didn't give a shit. Now I love to do the crossword puzzle.
I know, Daddy. Remember how I did those Sudokus? But he don't do them anymore.
Sudoku.
But remember Sudoku. Well, whatever it is. I said Sudoku. remember how he loves them, but he hasn't done them in years.
You don't do any puzzles, any games, puzzles, anything?
No.
Did we used to play games when I was a kid? Monopoly?
Monopoly. We used to play Candyland, Monopoly, cards.
You would play with us?
Yeah.
Oh,
of course.
I don't remember. I remember Monopoly for sure because I love Monopoly.
Candyland. There was another game with the battleship. Was it Battleship?
Yeah, it's called Battleship.
Yeah, there was games.
But those Battleship is only a two-player game. You never played Battleship.
Well, I used to watch you play. I think I did play it.
Battleship?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
And what else?
Candyland, I remember.
Oh, yeah, Candyland.
And I remember... Operation. I had that game where if you touch the sides, it buzzed.
Those
games are probably worth $5,000 a piece now. They're so old. Like Operation, could you imagine? I bet you have them in your garage, which I would very much enjoy you clean out soon or have someone come to clean out because when you and Daddy leave this earthly plane, I'm going to have to clean it out and it's 50 years of junk.
No, Daddy cleaned it out not that long ago. There's mostly your brother's stuff in there.
I should have inspected it.
Every sport you could think of Michael's is in there. Hockey, rollerblade.
Oh, my God.
Oh, there's everything in there.
That was not
tennis
me as a
racket.
Kid.
Do you have tennis rackets? Tennis rackets. Well, you know, I don't know how many bicycles we threw out.
Well, we would get a new bicycle every Christmas when we were growing up.
I know, but remember they were hanging in the garage on the wall?
Yeah.
Dear God.
Is Daddy's big picture of him bowling still in there?
Yeah. That I'm not throwing that out.
Why? No, no. But why does he have that?
Because he bowled a 298, and his that picture was up on the wall in Wallington Lanes.
Wow.
They had all the 300 bowlers, and he was 290. He did it. 298. He left two pins standing.
Did you ever go and watch him bowl when you were dating or anything?
No. I don't think so. No, because he used to bowl like at night during the week, and I didn't go.
What were you doing at night? You couldn't go over there?
Well, I was home with my mother, father, whatever. I could have went, but I didn't go.
And in those days, did you live together before you got married, you and Daddy?
No. Are you kidding?
Wow.
I had to be home at 2 o'clock when I was engaged in the morning.
Well, that's very late. I mean, what do you mean 2 o'clock?
No, it wasn't.
Who the hell's waiting up for you at 2 a.m.? Your father?
My mother.
She was waiting up at 2 a.m.?
Not waiting up, but I would tiptoe into their room and say, Mom, I'm home.
Oh, you mean you couldn't sleep over?
No, we couldn't sleep.
Wow. And so you didn't move in until you were married?
Yeah, I lived at home.
Wow, can you imagine that nowadays?
Well, that was the going thing.
No, I know, but that seems so crazy. You want to get to know a person and how they live in the house? What if they're super messy?
Well.
Then you're stuck with them.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's how it was in those days. Yeah. It's not like today.
I think it's better now that you can live with somebody in peace and just get to know them before you get... I mean, getting married, you know, look, you just celebrated your 50 years, but it's a big thing. And if you get divorced, it's legal problems, and I want this, and you're getting half of this. And it's a big hassle. And, you know, there's a lot more divorces than there are people that are married 50 years.
Because now it's so easy to get divorced. So you say, what is it?
Irreconcilable differences. Irreconcilable
differences, and they get divorced.
Well,
but years ago.
It's still not easy, I don't think. I mean, the lawyers and all that.
It's easy now for people to just walk out of the marriage, Jim. Years ago, you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, but it just, I just can't imagine not living with the person before you get married.
Well, that was the olden days.
Oh, my God.
You're talking 50, 60 years ago.
Yeah, what year did you get married?
71,
50 years. Why can't I do math?
I don't know.
I was never good at math.
Me either.
Well, remember algebra? I had that Mrs. Sudia and her teeth were all crooked on the bottom. She was a scuba diver. Remember her? Remember Mrs. Sudia?
I remember her. But I wasn't good at math, but I was great in English.
Yeah, English, the arts. I was good in English, the arts, creative writing.
I wasn't good in math either.
No, and Daddy did not do very well in school.
Well, he didn't even study or whatever.
I remember seeing his report card once from senior year, and it was all D's.
No, C's.
And D's.
He got A in typing.
How were your grades at Lyndhurst High School in 1960?
I was good. Up a quarter of my class.
Really?
And Aunt Rhody. Oh, yeah. I never took a history exam in 4 years because to get A's. I don't even know if I took English. I don't remember, but we were the upper, and we had 200-something kids in our class.
And am I remembering correctly that you had the same Spanish teacher that then I had?
No, I never had Spanish.
Senora Wright.
I never had her. Maybe Aunt Rhody had Spanish.
Yeah, but she taught there.
Yeah.
That is nuts. Think about that. She taught you, and then she taught me.
Not me. I didn't have Spanish.
I know, but I'm saying she taught. I know, but I'm saying she taught the same year that you were in high school.
Right, right.
And then all those years later to teach your teenage son?
I don't know if Aunt Rhody had her. I don't know, Jim.
Do you remember any French?
No. French, I should have never took that with all those accents. You know, you had to put the accent on top of the letter. Oh, boy.
I wish you spoke. You know, when Bridger and I went to France, he said, oh, Jim, I took French. Don't worry about it. He knew four words. He didn't know anything. He said, oh, don't worry about it. He goes in, un peu, chocolat. The guy goes, you want one chocolate piece? And what else do you want? In perfect English. Because he was like, these people are not from here.
Oh.
Yeah, French is hard.
Yeah. And I had 2 years of it.
I had to sing in French, Italian, and German. When I went to NYU, I studied opera. I mean, I was a musical theater major, but I studied opera, and I had to sing in French. It was terrible, very difficult.
Oh,
it's beautiful, though. When you're in Paris, and everybody around you is just speaking French, it's the most beautiful language.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. It's just seamless, the way it kind of flows.
It just flows, yeah.
But learning it, Italian, I learned much, much quicker. My teacher used to say, because I'm Italian, it's like in my genes, you know?
Really?
But yeah. French, ooh, and Spanish is not very difficult to learn. It's very similar to Italian. I went to Mexico City to shoot a commercial, and I was speaking Spanish. It was fun. I don't know but I know some, a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, where are you going tonight? What are you going to do? Sunday night, you have to watch the kids tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah. I'm going to do nothing tonight. I'm not
anything
going anywhere.
On TV, or what are you going to have? You had dinner already?
No, because we ate lunch like 2:30.
You always on Sundays have your Italian meatballs, sausage. Every Sunday.
Well, mostly. Sometimes we have steak on. Sometimes we'll barbecue steak on the grill or something. Yeah. And did you hear there's going to be like a chicken shortage?
No.
it's all over the news because, like, during the pandemic, everybody was having, like, going to, like, these fast foods and having chicken nuggets and McDonald's and stuff. And now there's going to be a shortage of chicken. And they have these restaurant owners in the city on, and they were saying, like, they would order, like, 8 cartons of chicken, and they would only get 3.
Really? In New York City?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't hear anything about it.
And it was in the paper today, too. There's going to be a chicken shortage. So I told Daddy,
what am I going to eat?
I don't know.
That's all I eat is chicken.
I know. We have chicken once or twice a week.
You could have turkey. You know, there's alternatives.
Oh, yeah.
But chicken is everything. I have chicken all the time.
Yeah, it was in the paper. It was in the paper today.
Oh, wow. I have to look at that. I didn't see that in the New York Times. What paper was it in?
It was in the Star. Well, we get 3 papers. We get the Record. It was in the Star Ledger or the Daily News. I don't know, one of them.
Oh, I have to look
that. I don't really like the Daily News, but Daddy gets it. All there is in there is killings, rapes. It's terrible, that paper.
I know. You told me the city was full of gangs. I mean, the city is beautiful. I just came back from New York. There's nobody in it. It's wonderful. You could sit down on the subway anytime you want.
Yeah, I know. But every night there's a shooting.
Every night there was a shooting in 2016. I mean, that's in New York City. There's 45 zillion people. There are shootings. Wow. There's shootings here every night. Guess what? In Los Angeles, there's shootings every night.
But I'm just saying, and there's shootings every night. There's all these gangs floating around.
No, I don't think so, Mom.
Well,
I didn't see any gangs in New York.
Well, maybe you like did, newsies. But there is.
Well, where are I? There's a lot. Okay, well, I guess I didn't see them marching through the streets, the gangs.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's a whole gang. Like, there's 2 people shooting people, and they're... This little kid got shot.
I know. There's a lot of stoop.
And it's all these people that are shooting are like part of gangs.
I know. Well, there's a lot of violence and there's a lot of work to be done. But I don't know that. I would imagine that New York City is a little more dangerous now than it was before the pandemic because there are less people in it, which makes it a little more dangerous. If you're walking, you know, it's funny because I was thinking after I got back from New York, it was like, you're walking down the street and it's empty. There's no one on the street.
Right.
Some streets, not all the streets. Most of the streets have people on them. And all the neighborhoods have outdoor dining. It's wonderful. It's like Europe. It's lovely. And if it's a nice night, you sit outside. It's beautiful. They have lights. They make it look nice. You know, the city is coming back to life.
Oh, it certainly is.
But there are some streets you walk down that are empty. And I thought to myself, like, well, nobody moves to New York City to walk down an empty street. You move to New York City so you never have to feel alone. Like, that's why you move there, because you like people and you like a city, you know? So it's going to take time, but it's on its way back. And some Broadway shows are going to open at the end of August for Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
Tourists are going to start coming back. You know, that's what I experienced in New York just a couple weeks ago, is that there are no tourists. It's just people from the United States. If they're tourists, they're from San Diego, they're from Pittsburgh.
Probably here on business.
No, I don't think on business. No. They were sightseeing. There's not really anything, you know, to see. I mean, you can still see things, but I lost your video.
It said low battery. I don't. Oh, here, I'm back.
With this low battery. Why can't
charge
your phone?
It's okay. I'm back.
Do you charge your phone overnight or no?
Yes, I charge it overnight, but I don't charge it.
And then
are you
just talking constantly on it all day for 10 hours?
But Jim, this is an old phone. Okay.
Well, with that, Mom, I'm going to let you go. Enjoy your evening.
Thank you, son.
I'm sure you'll have a wonderful night. It's always a pleasure to have you on the Baby Mouth podcast. Lois, my mother, give her a round of applause wherever you might be listening from. She could use it. Mom?
Yes. Stay safe, son.
Have a great night.
Oh.
The Baby Mouth theme song is performed by me and was written by me and Jesse Vargas. Jesse also orchestrated, recorded, and mixed the song. The Baby Mouth artwork was created by Tim Quartier. You can follow the Baby Mouth podcast on Instagram and Twitter at Baby Mouth Pod. Tell me about your own personal food nightmare. Have you ever been forced to eat something horrible at a fancy party or on a first date? Is there a food you're afraid to try? I want to know all about your scary food experiences. email me at babymouthpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to listen and subscribe to Baby Mouth wherever you get your podcasts. And please, don't forget to leave a review. Baby Mouth!